Ministeri Shabta. Today is the 14th of April, 1992, and I'm interviewing Mrs. Marion Walsh of Morehead regarding her experiences in the United States Navy waves. And so we'll start with a quick question here. Can you tell me where and when you were born?
I was born in Devil's Lake, North Dakota, August 1st, 1924.
Okay. Did you grow up in Devil's Lake?
No. My home was in Rock Lake. That's where the hospital was where I was born.
Okay.
But I lived in Rock Lake, North Dakota, mm-hmm. and went to school grades 1 through 12 there.
Okay. And this was a city school then, in town.
Mm-hmm.
What'd your dad do for a living?
He was a merchant.
Mm-hmm.
He came to our town about the year after it was started, so he was really an old pioneer in the town. My mother was a domestic science teacher.
Hmm.
And she came to teach in Rock Lake and met my father there.
Okay, at the public school mm-hmm. she was teaching. You say your dad was a merchant. Did he operate a general store?
General store, yes.
Mm-hmm. And how long was that store open? You say it started about a year after the town was founded.
Yes, 1906 until about 55 or 57, something like that.
Almost exactly 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
I see. Dry goods, mm-hmm. just about anything, you name it, he had it.
Yep. I learned to make change before I went to school.
Okay.
I did the candy counter.
I see. Now, you say you went to school in Rock Lake throughout 12 years.
Yes.
And that means you would have graduated about 1941, 42.
42.
Okay. You say your mother was a teacher
mm-hmm.
when she came to the town. Do you remember when approximately that was that she came to the Rock Lake?
1918, 17, somewhere in there.
Somewhere mm-hmm. along those times. Okay. And I should ask your maiden name.
Janke. J-A-H-N-K-E.
Okay.
Mispronounced.
That's a German name, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it's Janke.
Okay. And your father's first name?
Charles.
Or was it actually Carl?
It was actually Carl.
Okay.
His confirmation Bible says Carl.
Did he come from Germany?
No. But my both my paternal grandparents came. They came from Germany after my grandfather's flour mill burned down.
Okay.
And he decided if he was going to start over, he told me this, I want to start in a better country.
I see. And so sometime would have been like the 1870s or 80s, something like that,
mm-hmm.
he came to the United States.
Yes.
Okay. On your mother's side of the family, were they also German?
No. My maternal grandmother was Scottish.
Okay.
And she came when she was 18 years old to the United States. And my grandfather was Pennsylvania Dutch.
Okay. And your mother, her name?
Wilkins.
Mm-hmm. And her first name?
Mary.
Mary Wilkins. Yeah, that's a very English-sounding name.
Mm-hmm. My grandmother was Kennedy.
Let me ask you a question. Since your father was born Carl Janke, took the anglicized version, Charles Janke, when he was a merchant in Rock Lake. Did he ever talk much about World War One?
No, not very much.
I
he
just
said
wondered.
By that time he had children,
mm-hmm.
and therefore he wasn't up for the draft or anything.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't talk about it much.
I just wonder if he had. In some of the towns in North Dakota and here in Minnesota, people of German descent were not very well treated during the First World War.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, with having anglicized his name, it may not have been readily evident for him.
Well, there were a lot of Germans in our community.
Mm-hmm.
I just never heard anything about it.
Okay. Now, you say that he'd already had children by the time of World War One, so I take it you weren't the first child.
No, I'm the fourth.
The fourth child.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You say your mom was a teacher. Were you interested in going into teaching or something when you were getting out of school?
No, I was not.
Were you thinking at all about what you wanted to do when you got out of high school?
Yes, I was going to be an occupational therapist.
That was your interest.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have in mind a particular school you were going to go to?
No, it was what I could afford because there were a lot of us, and our parents sent all of us to college, but it wasn't easy
to
do
that.
And I went, my freshman year, I went to Grace Harbor Junior College in Aberdeen, Washington.
Okay.
Where an older sister was working.
I see.
And I went to junior college there, and I worked part-time.
Since she was related, you were able to get some kind of a break on the tuition?
Mm-mm.
Or it just gave you a place to live while you went
yes,
to school?
Yes, right.
I see. During the Depression, your dad have any trouble keeping the store open or keeping it going?
Sure.
Okay.
He surely did.
Okay.
He managed very well. I don't know how he ever ever managed it, because he did so much credit business.
I can imagine, particularly with the farmers around that town,
mm-hmm.
he pretty much had to keep accounts for just about everybody. Yeah.
And he was really quite tender-hearted, and he couldn't stand to see children with nothing to eat, so he gave them food.
I see. Did you work there most summers while you were growing up?
I worked there lots.
Lots. Mm-hmm. And you said you ran the candy counter.
Mm-hmm. I learned that early.
Okay. What else did you do there?
Oh, everything. Mm-hmm. I kept books. As I grew up, you know, my older sisters would go off, and then you'd get promoted to the next job.
Okay.
Counted eggs. I did everything.
Uh-huh. Why did you decide on occupational therapy?
I don't know. You know, when I graduated from high school, the opportunities simply were not there for women.
Teaching was one possibility.
And I didn't want to be a teacher.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't want to be a nurse, because that mm-hmm. wasn't my thing at all.
Which was secretary.
Secretary, and that wasn't my thing. So I thought, well, I thought occupational therapy was a helping
mm-hmm.
Occupation. Therefore, I thought maybe that would be good.
Yeah, another possibility would have been libraries. That was always quite common in those days.
Mm-hmm.
Did they talk about that much in high school, those kind of occupations
mm-hmm.
for women?
We did, not for women, but we had a compulsory course in vocations.
I see.
When I was in high school.
And so this?
And I went through the list, and I thought, well, I'll try it. However, I hadn't reckoned on the fact that I really hate chemistry, and I really hate a lot of science.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came right down to it, the things I was taking weren't my thing at all.
Uh-huh. What were your favorite subjects in school?
Political science, history, mm-hmm. English.
And if you didn't want to teach, that leaves...
Yeah.
Only a few doors,
yeah, right.
If any, open. Since you were interested in history and political science, did you follow what was going on in Europe during the late 30s?
Oh, indeed. My grandmother was living with us part
Which
of the
grandmother
time.
Is this now?
My grandma Wilkins.
Okay.
The Scottish immigrant.
Mm-hmm.
And a very bright lady. And extremely, she taught me politics, really.
Uh-huh. She had particular, fairly strong political opinions?
Boy. She did. She couldn't stand Franklin Roosevelt.
Okay. She was a Republican by
mm-hmm.
application?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, there were a lot of Roosevelt
mm-hmm.
and anti-Roosevelt
yeah.
people out there, which made for a lot of discussion in the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
But politics in Europe now, she followed that as well?
Yes, she had a sister who lived in Scotland, and I can remember when we would get letters about the war, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And Aunt Marion...
Are you named for her?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Leishman was her name, Kennedy Leishman. Used to write long letters, and my grandmother and Aunt Minnie used to write back and forth. And she would tell about sitting in a closet that was fitted out
mm-hmm.
with dark curtains and waiting for the bombs to go over, because she lived near Glasgow.
Okay, sure. Naval bases nearby,
mm-hmm.
one of the primary targets during the Battle of Britain.
Yeah.
I see. Did your grandmother, for example, have very strong opinions about the representatives from North Dakota? Because there were some very, very influential senators at that time from North Dakota. Jeremiah was one.
Yes.
And he was extremely determined to keep the United States
mm-hmm.
out of that war in Europe, as he called it.
Yeah.
The other one, if I recall, was the governor, and I can't think of his name right now. Darn, I just can't
Which
think
one?
Of it. He was elected, but they wouldn't let him take his seat right away.
Well, you mean Bill Langer?
Bill Langer, right.
Yeah.
Langer was the other one. And, of course, he was fairly isolationist, but mm-hmm. he had to keep quiet during those first year or so because he had trouble just taking his seat in the Senate. But most of the representatives in Congress for that state were very much against American involvement in the war. They voted against Lend-Lease. They voted
mm-hmm.
for neutrality acts. What did your mother stand on, or your grandmother rather, stand on that? Did she want the United States to get involved in the war?
No, I don't think she especially did, but
uh-huh.
she also was very opposed to what was happening in Europe
uh-huh.
and what she knew was happening. But
Most of the people in the state weren't that aware of what was going on in Europe at that
Probably
point.
Probably not. I can remember he was actually one of my mentors in our local politics. His name was E.J. Langley.
Uh-huh.
And he was our representative. And he came one day with Gerald P. Nye in tow to introduce him to me.
Okay.
And I was at the beauty shop having my underneath one of these hair dryers.
How old were you then?
Oh, I was still in high school, 16 or 17 or something like that. But he knew I was interested in politics. So.
Okay, now Langley was in the Congress, in the House of Representatives.
House of Representatives, yes.
Okay.
And anyway, I remember that, I still remember this because they came and they stood so close to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to get out from under these. Well, I couldn't get out because their feet were there. So they were talking to me and I couldn't hear a word they said.
So you met Gerald Nye, but you don't know what he said.
No, that's right. But that was... during that, you know, about 42, 41, 42, somewhere in there. 40,
right.
Was it? Maybe? Somewhere in there.
Sure. Nye, unfortunately, had the misfortune of making a speech against American aid to Britain at the time of Pearl Harbor. I mean, he was literally speaking about this in New York when the announcement came about Pearl Harbor, which... Mm. Really harmed his chances for re-election in 1944, I think it was, if I recall. When he ran for re-election, he was defeated.
Oh, I'm sure.
Do you remember much about the build-up towards, in the fall of 1941, when the National Guard of North Dakota was called to service, for example? Did you know anybody who was in the Guard?
No, I did not. Uh-huh. I didn't know anybody, but... I had a remarkable history teacher, really, truly remarkable man. And
what was his name?
Harold Sheets.
Okay.
He taught later up at Grand Forks.
Okay.
But he was our school superintendent. He was my history teacher.
Okay.
And he made us review articles in all the news magazines. I spent a lot of time in the library because I was reading all these articles. And I can still remember one about the Senate turning down the fortification of Guam.
Okay.
That sticks in my mind because we talked about it in class and should it be done, and of course it should have been done.
Mm-hmm.
But I know I read Mein Kampf in those years when it was an awfully big book and it was
an awfully dull book too.
Very dull, hard reading.
But Harold Sheets asked you to read that.
No, he did not. I was interested enough, so
okay.
I just read it on my own.
I see.
And I remember discussing it with my parents.
Now, that brings up an interesting question. Once the United States entered the war, it wasn't really possible to get a copy of Mein Kampf in an American bookstore.
Is that right?
That's right.
Huh.
Now, which is an interesting thing, but it was readily available in both English and German during the late 30s. And, in fact, there were a number of people in North Dakota who subscribed to a German-language newspaper that was very pro-Hitler until the war broke out, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an interesting period, and there was a lot of interesting divisions of thought at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that you got to read about a lot of this and reflect on it when you were so young.
I remember in Life magazine that there was Women Against the War.
That's right.
And I can remember a picture of them in an old Life magazine kneeling, and I don't remember what they were.
I wonder if that was the Mothers Against the War.
I think it is. Mothers Against the War, that's right.
Who talked a lot about don't draft my son, and they did lobby a great deal, particularly in the fall of 41, when they were renewing the draft.
Mm-hmm.
They had the draft in the fall of 40 for 1 year, and that's how the National and Minnesota Guards were called to active duty.
Mm-hmm.
Then in the fall of 41, they had to vote again to renew the draft, and it passed by one vote, that renewal. So they were very involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, while a lot of students your age weren't paying much attention to it, and I've talked to several, and they said, oh, we didn't pay any attention to it.
Oh, yeah,
You were following it.
I did, yeah.
Do you remember Pearl Harbor?
I surely do.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Our Sunday dinner was finished. We put the good dishes away, and all my sisters had drifted on to their own activities. My dad had his day off, and he was napping on the couch.
Okay.
And my mother was at a Sunday school teacher's meeting.
Okay.
And I was curled up in a rocking chair reading the new issue of Life. And I just finished reading an article by Claire Booth Luce on General Douglas MacArthur and our stronghold in Corregidor. Just finished reading that. And they used to have a picture of the week, a full-page picture, and the picture that day, that Sunday, was of two Japanese envoys who had come to America to negotiate. And they sat there with their striped pants on, as I recall it. And I remember thinking, methinks you smile too much or something, the inscrutable Japanese.
Uh-huh.
And I was looking through the magazine, and our front door just flew open. And my mother just flew in shouting, "Get up, get the radio on, we're at war, we're at war."
I'll be darned.
And my mother never shouted, and she didn't fly in, and so that it was so untypical.
Could I have you said she was at a Sunday school teacher's meeting?
Mm-hmm.
Could I ask what kind of church you attended?
Methodist.
Methodist church
across the street.
Uh-huh.
High school was at Kitty Corner across the street.
So she was the first one in the family who heard this.
Yes. And our superintendent of Sunday schools was obviously there, and her son came running over and said, "You better come home, we're at war."
Oh, dear. Did you have any brothers?
No.
Okay.
All sisters.
Did you turn on the radio then and follow the events on the radio?
Yeah. My dad jumped up, and we just sat glued to the radio till midnight, listening to everything that was there.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was hard to comprehend just what was really happening at the time.
Do you remember your father or your mother making any particular comments once they realized the war was going on for the United States?
No, it was there. It had happened. We had to do what we could.
I see. Now, since your mother was so involved in the Methodist Church, I'm curious, did the church get involved in any wartime activities that you remember before you yourself joined the service?
I remember that my mother sent materials, I suppose religious materials, to all the soldiers we had over there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they were involved certainly in writing to all of our members who were overseas, and there were a lot for a little town.
Sure.
And also, I can remember I was learning to knit, and my grandma taught me to knit, and there was all this khaki yarn. My mom and my grand knit all kinds of caps and scarves and things like that.
Yeah, that was very common.
Mm-hmm.
Did they get involved in Red Cross activities, making bandages, that kind of thing?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so.
It was pretty much knitting and, you said, religious materials that they sent.
And corresponding and keeping in touch with
members of the town. Mm-hmm. Did you remember the Guard going off to active duty before the war began? Did you have any friends that were involved in that?
They went.
Uh-huh.
164th.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't have any friends, no.
Were there people in Rock Lake who went with the Guard?
Mm-mm. What I do remember, let me see, was the death march itself. My dad used to pick up kids around town. You know, he had all these girls at home, so he would take some waif under his wing, and then he'd bring them home so they'd get a square meal.
Uh-huh.
We had a lot of kids in and out, you know.
This is during the 30s?
Yeah.
Okay.
And this one kid we called Mahat.
Okay.
And he had rickets, and he came from a poor family. And I'm sorry to say that we called him Mahat because he looked a lot like Mahatma Gandhi.
Okay, so that was the nickname you gave him.
Yes. And he was dirty and poor and always hungry. And I can remember him eating many, many meals at our house.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was the young lad that was in the army and was on the Bataan Death March and died.
Okay, so he went into the army before the war began.
Yes, he did. But I don't know, I don't remember the circumstances at all.
But you can remember later discovering that he had been
on the death march.
On the death march. And is that your most vivid memory of the first, or those early months, hearing about what was going on? Because you mentioned MacArthur and Corregidor.
Yeah.
And the Pacific War, of course, was the early focus. We weren't fighting, per se, in the Pacific.
There were two other...
And the Atlantic, rather.
Two other young men who died from my hometown.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I really remember. They would come home with their uniforms on and things like that, but nothing remarkable.
When did you decide to join the Waves?
Well, I had finished 2 years of college.
Okay, and this was at the junior college?
Yes, 1 year at junior college, and I came and back home and went to NDSU.
Oh, I see.
NDAC it was in those days.
Right.
And
that would have been 1942? 42 to 43?
42, 43, 44.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And my best friend from my hometown and I decided that things were happening out there, and we didn't want to sit on the sidelines. We wanted to be a part of it. So we decided we would join the Navy.
And I should ask you what we did. Yeah, I should ask you now. You spent a year at NDAC. Did you live in Fargo during that time?
Yes, I did.
And what was the campus like during that year? I mean, it must have been fairly empty.
Yes, although there were the Army was stationed there.
They had an officers program of some kind. I know that.
I've forgotten what it was now, but
it was some kind of a specialized program. I remember reading about it. But other than that, there were very few men students.
Yes, there were very few men students.
And what about the town? Was the town very active at that time?
Well, of course, I came from the world's smallest town. I thought it was very exciting, very big town.
Did they have blackouts on the campus the year you were there?
If we did, it didn't impress me.
Okay, that's fine. But basically, you and your friend, I should ask your friend's name?
Gene Spencer,
decided you wanted to join the Navy and see the world,
as they say.
See the
world, right.
Okay. How old were you at that time?
I was 18 when we started, and when I went into the Navy, my birthday was in August, so I was 19 then. So my parents had to sign for me.
So that had been in August of 43?
44.
So you'd have been 20 then.
Well, yes, I would. By the time I went in November, but I when I signed up in summer, I was 19.
You were 19.
Yeah.
Okay. And if I recall, then a person under 20 could not, or maybe it was even 21.
For the women,
a woman could not join without their parents' permission.
And my mother said she would sign for me. And then when my mother signed for me, my dad said he wanted to sign then, too. He was a little reluctant about it at first. But once Mom said, then that was fine.
Were they worried you might go overseas?
No. My dad said, I know you'll smoke.
That was his first concern. Okay. At that time, there wasn't the expectation that women would get involved in a situation that would be combat or, in any great physical danger.
No.
Of course, nurses did go overseas, and there were women who were killed at Pearl Harbor, who were nurses and in other professions, and there were women who were on the Bataan Death March, for that matter, who were nurses overseas. So you never knew that for sure. But you decided you wanted to join, and they did give you permission.
Yes.
Now, you say it wasn't until about November of 44, is that right?
I was in New York City. We reported for duty the 2nd of November of 44.
In New York City?
In New York City.
Okay, and that's where you were officially inducted.
No, I was sworn in Grand Forks.
In Grand Forks.
In the middle of the summer sometime. I've forgotten just when.
Why did you pick the Navy?
Well, I liked it. I thought it was a little bit more exclusive than the Army. And we just thought we'd like to join the Navy.
Okay. What kind of training did you get when you started your basic training?
Well, we got a lot of drilling and a lot of exercise, believe me. And we learned all kinds of things. We had identification of aircraft. We had all kinds of classes that we went to at boot camp.
And where was that?
Hunter College, New York City.
Okay.
Well, among the things that I learned was Navy language, like port and starboard and the head and the galley and so forth, and that our 21:30 bedtime meant 9:30 and not one word thereafter. But unfortunately, we were so exhausted that it worked. And I learned that bear a hand on the ladder seaman meant hurry. It didn't mean take off your gloves or anything. And I learned to lace a bunk so tightly that you could bounce a coin. And I learned how to salute correctly. And I learned about white glove inspection the hard way.
What do you mean the hard way?
Well, Gene and I were supposed to clean the bathroom. And we did it with great energy, scouring powder and steel wool and everything. And we were billeted in apartments.
Near
Hunter College, yes.
I see.
At 12 girls to an apartment and one bathroom.
Okay, now how many rooms to an apartment?
Well, there must have, I think there were probably three bedrooms. It's four, two bunks
okay.
in each one.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
12 people in one bathroom.
Uh-huh.
Sounds like my family in the morning. Pretty okay.
Okay, well, anyway, when we finished cleaning the bathroom, we were standing at attention when the inspection party came in, and they said the head is filthy. And I was never so crushed. But anyway, there was another time when I got into trouble, and that was I was supposed to wash the woodwork. And I said, well, I'm the only one in here tall enough to reach the wooden molding in the hall, and nobody's going to do that. Anyway, and that was the day Eleanor Roosevelt came, and they did a full-scale white-glove inspection, and we were all 12 confined to quarters for dust on the overhead. My popularity was really in trouble.
Most of your officers and instructors at Hunter College, were they women, or were some of them men?
There were some men, mostly women.
Uh-huh. What about in the actual physical training, the calisthenics, all these
mm-hmm.
exercise training? Most of that was run by women, too?
Most of it was, yeah.
Were they themselves recently in the Navy,
mm-hmm.
or had they been in a little longer?
No, well, not very long.
I don't think that they had any women in the Navy
before
the war.
They didn't.
There was a little bit in the Army just before the war. They'd gotten it started, but not for very long.
No, not long at all.
So these officers, did you get the feeling they knew much more than you did?
I tell you, they were good. I liked them.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they were great. We had what would she be? Anyway, she's the one that our drill master, anyway.
Uh-huh.
We called Sammy, and she was 6 feet tall, and her voice boomed out, you know, and she really marched us along. And we had the wind coming off the reservoir
uh-huh.
there, and I can remember drilling with my eyes closed, hoping that everybody else would keep step, because it was very chilly.
Uh-huh. That helped you concentrate as well, to just kind of
no.
focus on yourself?
I just
stay out of the cold.
Yep.
How long were you at Hunter College?
About 6 weeks.
About 6 weeks,
mm-hmm.
and this was in the late part of 1944?
Yes,
The last few months.
November, December.
Yeah, it was pretty cold. That was a pretty cold winter.
Yes.
It was very cold overseas, I know that, because I've talked to my father, who was in mm-hmm. France and Germany in that time. Where did you go after you received your training at Hunter?
Well, we went to Milledgeville, Georgia. Jean and I were both assigned to Georgia State College for Women in Milledgeville
mm-hmm.
to go to storekeeper school. But first I should tell you that before that, I was called in. And before we got our assignments, and let's see. Oh, no, that was afterwards, sorry.
That's okay. That's okay if you want to talk.
Let me see if I can get my sequence correct here. No.
The military.
We were just assigned there.
I see.
At that time, yeah.
And what do you mean by storekeeper school?
Well, we learned to do all the bookkeeping, I suppose, that there was for the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And I became a dispersing storekeeper after I was through.
Uh-huh. Did they give you any idea at the time you were up Milledgeville doing this training, what it was going to be for?
Well, we knew, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did they base this on, you know, your own background? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out how...
We took a battery of tests.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They gave you a series of tests.
Yeah, and it was considered a good job.
Mm-hmm. One thing I should ask you before we finish your training, did they give you rifle training?
No.
They did not give you any kind of weapons
mm-hmm.
training?
Mm-hmm.
Or any familiarity with it at all? Okay. And then you went to Milledgeville,
mm-hmm.
and how long were you there?
Mm-hmm. I was there for 3 months.
Okay. Early part of 1945?
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Like January through March, something like that?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, did you know the war was close to coming to an end in Europe?
Well, actually, I was less informed than I had been because we didn't have time
okay.
to keep up with the newspapers and have access to them. But, yes, I think we did.
The mm-hmm. Navy didn't go out of its way to keep you informed on what was going on overseas at
Not
that
really.
Time? Okay.
Not really. We were busy in our classes and so forth. And
mm-hmm.
and.
What kind of accommodations did you have in Milledgeville? Were you on the campus?
Yes, we had lovely accommodations.
Okay, dormitory accommodations
mm-hmm,
type?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The campus buildings were red brick with white pillars, and Sanford Hall, our new billet, had lounges and pianos and bathrooms galore. So that was a whole new Navy for us. And everybody was wonderful to us. You know, they didn't have time for you, really, except just to do what you had to do at boot camp. But when we got to Milledgeville, we were held up by two train wrecks, and we came in very late.
Mm-hmm.
And all the old girls were there waiting for us, and they carried our suitcases and everything like that. We couldn't believe it. We had this big meal waiting for us.
Now, what do you mean by old girls?
The ones who hadn't graduated, who were still in school.
I see.
But they were partly through their training.
The older class,
older class,
you want to call it, that they had at that point. Was this a specialized program, or was this just what they had set up for that training to take place?
It was what had been set up.
I see.
And they trained a lot of subdivisions, I suppose, in the storekeeper system.
Mm-hmm. Did you go to classes on the campus?
Mm-hmm.
Did they use the civilian professors there? Pretty much.
No.
Or was it all military instructors?
No, we had military instructors.
Uh-huh. Were there many students, I mean, based on what you could see, obviously you couldn't interact with them a whole lot since you were going to your own classes. Were there many students on the campus? Regular college students?
Yes, there were a lot.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
There were a few. Oh, good. Had you ever traveled outside of North Dakota before you joined the Navy?
Well, I went to school in Washington State.
Right, and that was about it?
That's about it. Well, you know, Minnesota and Canada. And
sure.
But not a lot.
But you'd never been to the East Coast.
Mm-mm.
So New York was a new experience.
Mm-hmm.
The South must have been a very different experience.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of the South?
I liked it.
Okay.
I enjoyed it. Our time there. Let's see. I had a little trouble with the language, as you can imagine.
Yeah, I imagine,
and
they felt the same way about you,
yes,
folks.
Yes, yes, indeed. Because I went in one day to a place, and my great love is caramels and chocolate. You know, those two things are the best things in the world as far as I'm concerned. And so after all this, these hardships, you know, for the classes, we decided we'd go and we'd gone downtown. Jean and I had gone downtown, and I went in the shop, and I'd say, do you have any caramels?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And everybody was mystified, and so they were asking, what does she mean? And they were all looking around. I said, you know, they said, what are they? What is it? And I said, well, you know, caramels are candy. They're good to eat. Nobody could get that at all. And finally, a young man said, she means caramels.
Yes.
So I had a little language problem.
Uh-huh. Same problem in New York? Did you find the accent there? Was
no, not that bad.
Not that. It was
besides, they didn't let us out much.
Uh-huh.
We were in a war bond parade down Fifth Avenue.
Oh, in Milledgeville?
No, this was in New York.
In New York, okay.
But, and then we had one weekend liberty.
So you really didn't get to see much of New York.
No, but boy, we saw a lot for that time, for 2 days.
I understand.
Yeah. But I didn't really have that much contact with New Yorkers.
Uh-huh. But you did have contact with people from all over the country once you actually started going to these programs, and because the people you were with, now your friend Jean, you were fortunate that you weren't separated at all. You were going through the program together, but these people came from all over.
I know.
Was there any particular parts or types of people that you found irritated you?
Probably Brooklyn.
Brooklyn? Why?
Well, they seemed to be more arrogant.
Okay.
Certainly very self-confident.
Okay.
And, with all the answers, but really not. I got along with everybody.
Uh-huh.
I didn't find objectionable people, really.
Were any women in your unit Jewish?
Yes.
Had you met any Jewish people before
that?
No,
I had not.
How did you react to that?
When I think back, I was looking through my scrapbook the other day, and I said to myself, I don't remember them, anything about them being Jewish, and if we had Negroes, I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
It just didn't impress me.
The waves, in my memory, if there were blacks in the Navy, you didn't see them very often.
I didn't see any. Or else I don't remember.
Uh-huh.
They didn't, they just didn't impress us.
What about blacks in the South when you were in Georgia?
A lot of blacks in the South. Mm-hmm.
Was this your first encounter with blacks
to
any good extent?
Yes, it was. I found that the whites, this shocked me a little bit. Well, it shocked me a lot that there were separate places for them, and that they...
By separate places, you mean if you went down into the town of Milledgeville, where you mentioned earlier, going and asking for caramel, you discovered there were separate restrooms. Yes. If indeed there were any available for coloreds, as they were
except
called.
Except for waiting rooms at the at train depots. There were, they sat in the back. I had an interesting experience, I thought, when I was in New Orleans, when I was, I'm getting ahead of myself.
That's fine, go
on
ahead.
On this topic. I went and got on the streetcar, and it was the Canal streetcar, and thought nothing of it, sat down. And a woman came up to me, and she said, "Are you a Negro?" And I said, "No, I'm not. Why? I mean, I don't really look like a Negro."
Were you in uniform?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And she said, "Well, then you shouldn't be sitting in their seat." "Oh," I said, "I didn't. Are they reserved?" "I didn't know. I just sat down." She said, "You must not sit in that seat then." And they had sort of a sign with hooks on it. And you could put that behind you. But if that was in front of you, you were not to sit there. So that if there were more Negroes on the, more blacks on the streetcar, they had more seats. And if there were more whites, then they had more seats.
I see.
And I was quite shocked that anybody would accost me with something like that. I didn't think it would matter anyway. But I learned.
Did you get a chance to talk to any blacks while you were in the South?
Sure.
In Louisiana or in Georgia or wherever?
Sure. Yeah.
Were they subservient?
They're great.
That's how they were presented by Southerners.
Well, you know, one was our laundry lady, and she was great.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd go and joke with her, and she did our laundry for bought nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd go and deliver it and pick it up, and I can still remember this big, bright pink bed in this immaculate little cabin that we had near mm-hmm. the gate. And
this was her cabin?
Mm-hmm.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of in a rural setting almost.
Yes, it was. It was uh-huh. That was in Mississippi.
What was her name?
I don't know. I can't remember.
Okay.
I've forgotten.
Did you detect any resentment on the part of blacks?
Well, no, I can't say I really did, but I found something that was interesting to me, and that was that my dear friend, Kathy, who was from Anguilla, Mississippi, dealt better with blacks than I did. I mean, we had a cleaning lady when I was at the station in New Orleans, and I mean, I was absolutely as friendly as I, you know, I had no feelings. I hadn't been brought up with any mm-hmm. ethnic differences,
mm-hmm.
really. And so I had no feelings about her at all, except just, you know, I thought I was friendly. But she didn't like me. She liked Kathy. Kathy knew how to deal with her.
I see.
And that always puzzled me a little bit, because Kathy was from a plantation in Mississippi.
Now, when you say she knew how to deal with her, in what ways were she dealing with her differently than you were?
I don't know. But it was discernible.
Do you think you were patronizing, or do you think she was
patronizing? I don't think I was patronizing, but she seemed to know what to expect from Kathy more, and she wanted to, you know, she did the paying, and she did the telling her what to do and everything, and they just seemed to have a better working arrangement than I did.
Were there any overt racists that you encountered in the Navy?
No.
Okay.
Not really.
Now, you say you got your specialized training in Milledgeville,
mm-hmm.
and you were there for about 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were done with that, you were called in, something like that?
Yes, I was. And
what do you mean by called in now?
Well, I suppose like a counselor.
Mm-hmm.
And they offered me a job in Washington, D.C. as a specialist X.
Okay.
And I guess this was supposed to be quite a good assignment. And I said, well, what does a specialist X do? X as in what? X as in miscellaneous. And they said that I would be doing straight mathematical computations, and I despised math.
I see.
Well, I said, I don't want to do that at all.
This was an officer?
Yes.
That you mm-hmm. were dealing with at this mm-hmm. time, and they were coming up with where you were going to be
yes,
assigned.
Yes, where I was going to be go next.
I see.
And I said, I don't want to do that at all.
Mm-hmm.
My mother said she had to take algebra 5 times.
Okay. How did this person, this man or a woman?
A man.
And do you remember if he was a Ensign or...
Oh, I think probably JG or something like that.
Uh-huh. And how did he react to that?
Well, a little shocked.
I imagine if he's used to dealing with the standard Navy type, they don't ask. They just tell you
yes.
where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
But the ways were a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. And they said, well, then the next time I was called in, then I was given this duty assignment in Gulfport, Mississippi,
mm-hmm.
at the Naval Training Center there.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, sure, that's fine. You know, that was okay. And Jean got to go there, too.
I see. And when did you leave for Gulfport?
Well, we came home on leave for, I suppose, about a week or something like that, 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
And then I know I left all my grays uniforms
mm-hmm.
because we wouldn't have to haul them around then. I just wore my blues. And we no more than got down there. It was must have been the 1st of March, or in March anyway.
Blues are considered the lightweight uniform?
No, blues were the heavyweight.
The heavyweight uniform.
And that's what we wore.
I see.
All the time until then. So I just dropped off my grays at home.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately I had to write for them because we were going in.
Mm-hmm.
To our grays in March in Mississippi.
So it was so much warmer.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
That's why I remember the time.
You didn't take into account what the climate was going to
no.
be like down, on the, right down there on the Gulf Coast.
Yeah, I didn't.
Okay. So it was about early March or something like that
mm-hmm.
you arrived in Gulfport.
Mm-hmm.
What were your duties now at this center?
Well, I was assigned to the dispersing office, and I was waiting outside on a bench.
Mm-hmm.
And the in personnel,
mm-hmm.
along with some other people, had just arrived aboard.
Mm-hmm.
And this man went past, and then he said, "I'll take the tall blonde." And that was me.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to work in the dispersing office and had an excellent job.
How did you feel about being referred to as the tall blonde?
Well. Whatever.
Okay. Now, give me some background on this center, on the center that you're referring to. What was the formal name of the center?
Gulfport Naval Training Center.
Uh-huh. And it was designed for what purpose?
Training schools for it was all kinds of different schools that were at the training center, and then they were shipped from there
mm-hmm.
out as engineers, as firemen, as... carpenters, mates, is all kinds of things.
And the actual training took place in schools around the country?
No, right there.
Right there,
right
at
there.
That point. Okay.
At Gulfport. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so you're working in the dispersing center, so what
mm-hmm.
actually did you do then?
Figured pay.
Oh, I see.
And then I went on the pay line,
mm-hmm.
and I paid the men. And that was an excellent job,
mm-hmm.
because everybody wanted their money, you know. And the cooks would bring us pies. I remember every time we were on the pay line, they brought us coffee and pie.
Okay. How long were you there?
I should have refreshed my memory on times.
That's fine. Approximately.
Let's see. A couple of years. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, was there also a connection between that and the college training program, the college personnel training program?
No, none
at all. Okay.
Mm-mm.
I had that mixed up in our pre-interview. That's what I thought. It had something to do with the V5 programs.
No.
It had nothing to do with
nothing.
V5.
Mm-mm.
So you were in Gulfport,
mm-hmm.
which is real near New Orleans.
Yes.
For about 2 years, which would be...
A year and a half or so.
Till early 1947, thereabouts? Or late 46?
46, I think it was. I brought this along. Geez, I had to check something.
Mm-hmm.
I can
okay.
find out. But.
That's fine. So you worked in payroll
mm-hmm.
during that entire
mm-hmm.
time.
My boss discovered I had a talent for forgery, and
okay.
we had every sailor had a separate yellow payroll record, and you entered how much he had. It was a continuing record
mm-hmm.
for all the time he was in the service. And anyway, every single one of these kids that was transferred had to have his payroll signed by the dispersing officer.
Mm-hmm.
And when Lieutenant Layden discovered I could do that, I got all these stacks on my desk, so I signed all the records when they were transferred, and they were all transferred, obviously, because it was a training center.
Mm-hmm. You were signing his name?
Mm-hmm.
And his name was Layden?
Mm-hmm. Layden.
Okay.
55642. I know it by heart.
55642.
That's his number.
I see.
He had that on there, too. And then we got another officer in, and it was Lieutenant Bosman, and I had this reputation, so then I learned how to do his.
Yeah.